EU and I back together again Tuesday, December 21st, 2021 on Connecticut Today. We spoke to former Time Magazine senior correspondent Alan Sanders once again regarding President Biden's address to the nation on COVID-19 that happened just a few minutes before Professor Sanders joined us. Southern Connecticut State University biology professor Sarah Crawford outlined the latest medical information on the COVID-19 Omicron variant. There is always a PR angle to it, politics. We just carried all 25 minutes of President Biden's latest address on the COVID-19 situation, the Omicron variant. A lot of it was coaxing and cajoling people who have not been vaccinated to do that. He did have some pointed words about what could happen if the Omicron variant spikes among the unvaccinated. How was the speech? We go to one of our go-to folks again, Professor Alan Sanders, former Time Magazine senior reporter, Professor Emeritus, Political Science, St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. Professor Sanders, Paul again. Sir, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Paul. How are you?
Good, good, good. Thank you so much. Well, how'd the president do? What did you think, Professor Sanders?
Well, I thought given all the constraints around him, he did quite well. I think this was sort of, plain talk, Uncle Joe around the dinner table telling the American public what's going on. And basically, several things struck me. First of all, he spent a lot of time pleading with the unvaccinated, telling them how not only were they putting their own lives at risk, but those of others. Also, what struck me was that he went after the propagandists on cable TV and other places, telling the American people that these folks are putting the country in danger and creating lies and misconceptions about the vaccines. He also, of course, laid out his plans for the next few weeks regarding increasing testing and boosters, places, locations where people can get these things done, testing and boosters, and the federal aid that he was going to give to hospitals. He also stressed that schools are safe, given all the precautions that are and the protocols that are recommended. So I thought it was a pretty a good speech. Remember that the president, only has limited authority. He needs legislation to do things that might be more mandatory. But given the fact that he doesn't have that support in Congress for legislation, I thought he did very well under the circumstances. And his plain talk approach, particularly during this holiday period, I think will resonate well.
I wonder, Professor Sanders, we're in a position now, and I've been talking about this constantly. For whatever reason, somebody doesn't want to get vaccinated, political, scientific, a combination of two, neither one. For whatever reason, it's got to be tough because I know as a politician and as a president, he feels he has the responsibility to do that. But, not just in this situation, but we all have times in our lives, right, when we say, well, if I keep hammering this person on this, that, and the other, whether it's in my family or in my workplace or in my personal life, they're going to become more intransigent. Maybe should I back off? I can imagine that's a discussion going on in the White House. To what point do we keep hammering people? Do we alter the message? Do we go with the velvet glove? That's got to be tough.
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing to measure and to decide what to do about. The ultimate solution, I suppose, if you really believe something is important, is to mandate it. But to do that, you need to pass a law or to have regulatory authority to do so. And I think the president understands that at the moment, he really only has very limited regulatory authority. So you're left with basically cajoling, warning, indicating the facts as best as you can. And I think that's what he tried to do. He tried to have a measured approach, trying to tell the vaccinated people that all the science is there to indicate that the vaccination, including the regular shots and the boosters, are what you need to do to stay as safe as possible. He pointed that out repeatedly, but said, look, at the end, it's your choice, but your choice may involve great risks to your health and very possibly to your life. I mean, that's all the president can do right now, I think, given the fact that he doesn't have legislative authority to go further. Now, he's using the regulatory authority as much as he can, mandating that large employers require certain things be done because of rules and regulations pertaining to the safety of the workplace. But again, that's limited authority. And the problem is that, you know, the president doesn't have a clear majority in Congress. And of course, one has to also assume that maybe he doesn't want to go there. But had he wanted to go there, he really doesn't have the authority at the moment.
Professor Hangout, we'll be right back with you. I want to talk a little bit about the dynamic, shall we say, between Joe Manchin and the rest of the world. Professor Alan Sanders, Professor Emeritus, St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey, is the guest. Back with him first, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. WICC 600 AM, 107.3 FM online at WICC600.com. Little post address analysis today. The president speaking for about 25 minutes or so, starting at about 2:30 on COVID-19. Also, though, answering a few shouted questions from the press corps at the White House regarding the Build Back Better bill that has been scuttled, at least for now. And a former Time Magazine senior reporter, Professor Emeritus Polly Seid, St. Peter's University, Professor Alan Sanders is with us. You know, Professor, before I brought you on today, I had a very nice caller last hour who said, why doesn't Joe Manchin just become a Republican? And my answer to her was, well, because he's the king of the hill now as a Democrat. Some people calling him the de facto president. Now, at the end of Mr. Biden's questioning today, he said, we'll get something done, him and Joe Manchin. What are your thoughts on this whole thing?
Well, I think the president didn't want to get into a public debate with Joe Manchin during a press conference. I think whatever debate he wants to have with Senator Manchin, he wants to do in private.
Yeah.
And yes, Senator Manchin has been acting as if he were the president of the United States. I think I mentioned that to you, I think, last time we spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And he's proven to sort of keep moving the goalpost. There's always something wrong with whatever latest proposal is being discussed. A lot of people, you know, are frustrated with Manchin in the Senate and certainly in the House, and the president undoubtedly is also terribly frustrated with him. But there's only so much that he can do because Senator Manchin won't be up for re-election until 2024. Now, one Democratic strategy, and we'll see whether they play it out, is to actually force an actual vote on Build Back Better and see whether Joe Manchin is willing to be the only Democrat who is going to vote no on it. There are lots of people in West Virginia who support Build Back Better. In fact, I think some of the coal union leaders are now speaking to Senator Manchin and telling him much of what's in that legislation would be good for coal workers. So it's unclear that Senator Manchin has said a definitive no, final no, but certainly he has thrown a monkey wrench into the whole process, and some people are saying it's time to sort of call his bluff, if indeed it is bluff, and have the entire country know whether Senator Manchin really believes in most of these ideas in the bill or whether he opposes them.
You know, a lot of people probably think, Professor, in your career as a teacher, you probably taught this, and I've read a lot of books on this stuff. You know, you go back to the old-time power brokers back 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 years ago or so in the Senate, and then coming up to the present where, you know, there were senators like, for example, Lyndon Johnson and others who, you had individual senators who, unless they approved of something, it didn't happen. I wonder if we're kind of revisiting that right now, because I think we're so used to not seeing that, somebody wielding this much power openly.
Well, yes, but of course, you know, even in the older days, what you say is true, but there was usually a few members in either party who were willing to cross party lines to get certain things done that they thought were important. And so there was always sort of a middle, a rough middle, that was able to be swayed one way or the other. But we now are in an era where both parties are kind of, stuck in lockstep with their leadership. There's nobody on the Republican side who wants to give the Build Back Better plan any kind of a look. Even some of the proposals that some of them might individually think are good for the country. There's nobody willing to negotiate. There's no on the Republican side. And on the Democratic side, the same can be said, we got to have this or nothing else. And so what you've got is two parties that are locked in, and there's very little room to maneuver. And so Senator Manchin, at the moment, is the one who holds the deciding vote. Now, as I said, you know, in the past, when we talked, Paul, one of the things that may happen is if Senator Manchin, in fact, votes this down or helps to vote it down, the Democrats might be able to have a campaign issue saying what we need is not a 50-50 Senate, but a much larger Democratic majority so that individual senators, without mentioning Manchin, but certainly suggesting him, so that we all need to rely on individual senators will have a large enough majority to pass the bill that we've promised the American people we wanted to enact.
Professor Emeritus Alan Sanders. Professor, thank you. Happy New Year to you, and we'll talk in 2022. Thank you, sir.
All right. Best to you, too.
Take care. Thank you. Professor Alan Sanders, poli-sci, Professor Emeritus, St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. A return visit by one of our go-to folks who can break this down for us scientifically, kind of away from the rhetoric, professor of biology, Southern Connecticut State University, Dr. Sarah Crawford, is with us. Doctor, hi, it's Paul at WICC again. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing as well as can be expected. I have my shots. I have my booster shot. I'm waiting for the other booster so I can get a free cup of coffee somewhere when I get the booster. So get my little booster card, you know, punched.
Good. That's the next, right? The booster card.
Exactly. And I get that free coffee. Dr. Crawford, I wanted to have you on again just to kind of give us, away from all the rhetoric, the epidemiological, the biological, the virological breakdown of this. When did you, and I'm sure you did, when did you have your uh-oh moment about this? How long ago was that?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for saying that I try to stay away from the rhetoric, because I do. I try to just deal with the facts as I see them. When my uh-oh moment was probably before Omicron actually happened, because Omicron has been an epidemiological accident waiting to happen. As long as you have tons and tons of people who are unvaccinated and you have something like the Delta variant running around, it's only a matter of time till that virus mutates to something else. And that's what we're seeing now. So I'm not surprised. I'm just very disappointed, because hope, you know, you always have hope that things are going to turn out differently, but not this time.
Any reaction, any thought when you first heard, okay, we had these cases out of Southern Africa, and I know these cases now are being looked at. Researchers there are saying, well, these were minor infections and most people are okay. Thoughts on that? Is that something we shouldn't take as gospel as far as the resolution of those cases?
Well, the gospel on COVID has not yet been written, let me tell you. I'm sure you're aware of that. You know, this is something that we have many, many question marks about. So far, it seems like it's not significantly more infectious than the Delta. To say that it's less infectious is a bit premature. We don't have enough data yet. But I would say we can comfortably say that it's not a lot more infectious, because that would be very obvious. So either it's about the same or maybe even a little less, but we have to wait for more data to come in. But what we do know is that it's extremely highly transmissible. So it blows Delta out of the park there. It infects much more rapidly. There's much more shedding. It's extremely highly transmissible. And its sensitivity to what we've been using to ward things off in terms of vaccines and monoclonals is somewhat down.
Why does, Professor Crawford, a variant of a virus pop up in a certain area? Or is that the $64,000 question, as it were? Is it kind of the perfect storm that has to be in a perfect area with the right environment and the people who are infected? Is it just a happenstance kind of thing or not?
I don't think it's entirely random, although there are probably some factors that would randomize what's going to happen. I think it's more likely to occur in an area where there's a low vaccination rate, where there's high transmission of the original strain, And we saw this in India, for one, when the Delta arose. And now in South Africa, we also have the unique situation where there's a high population of individuals infected with HIV. And untreated HIV results in quite a bit of immunosuppression. So these individuals would be very sensitive to infection with SARS-CoV-2 and could even be what we would call mixing vessels for recombinations that could generate a more highly infectious virus. So that's one of the scenarios that's being thought about, but we don't have any definitive evidence. But we do know where you've got a lot of spread and low immunity, it's a recipe for further changes in the virus.
Sarah Crawford is a professor of biology at Southern Connecticut State University. Hang on, we'll be right back with you. We're going to talk more about the scientific, the non-rhetorical, the non-political angle about what's going on with the Omicron variant. First, though, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And we continue with Dr. Sarah Crawford, one of our go-to folks concerning COVID-19 over the past couple of years. She's a professor of biology at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. Dr. Crawford, I don't know how much, if any, you heard of what President Biden said earlier this afternoon, but, you know, not surprising, still, asking, cajoling, massaging people into getting vaccines, into getting boosters. He did, though, and I guess maybe this is his job as chief executive, paint out a worst-case scenario, and he did talk about getting ready, putting the wheels in early motion in case we're to need mass patient facilities, field hospitals, turning facilities into that if necessary, getting the military ready. In your opinion, from what you've seen, is that a real fear or is that just being prepared for a worst possible scenario?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think at this point, we can't be cavalier at all in our attitude towards COVID. I think what he's doing is totally appropriate under the circumstances, because even if it turns out that the Omicron variant is less severe in terms of its effects than Delta and others, we still have the numbers game. So when you look at so many more people being infected, this percentage will bring in a higher number of people with more severe effects. So I think everything is totally warranted. I'm very happy to hear that he's going to be distributing more tests, COVID tests. I think that's an area where, as a country, we've fallen below where we should be, because testing is the best way to prevent spread. And I think that the only thing that actually surprised me a bit was that he said we were caught off guard in terms of the Omicron, developing. And yeah. I think we need to be aware that nothing can surprise us anymore. This may not be the last variant. As this spreads so rapidly, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, chances are we're going to get another form of the virus coming up down the road. So until we see a lot less transmission and a quieting down overall, I think we have to be on high alert.
Do you think then there is maybe a danger, Dr. Crawford, of the chance that people who are fully vaccinated, two shots plus the booster, is there maybe just a human tendency to be a little less prudent and vigilant than people should be? They say, well, I've got my shots, but again, there is a chance that even with your shots, although it's less, you still can get pretty sick, right?
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, I mean, it's very disappointing. I think there's a combination of COVID fatigue, disappointment that we thought here we are all boosted, ready to go. We can actually live our lives again. And now we get thrown this curveball. So, it's very frustrating. And part of that is a feeling that you want to rebel. You know, you want to say, well, I'm not going to worry about this anymore. But, depending on your circumstances, and each person has to evaluate his or her own risk factors and the risk factors within the family, because the virus doesn't act alone. It's acting on a host. And depending upon the host, that will in turn depend to some degree on what the outcome is. So you have to be pragmatic here, and as disappointing and as unfortunate as this is happening over the holiday season, I think we have to sit back and say, you know what, this variant can infect you fairly well, even if you've been fully vaccinated. It certainly does look like the booster has a good positive impact on less susceptibility to infection, but it certainly doesn't remove it. There's quite a few breakthroughs going on.
Isn't it amazing that when you look at this, and the closest thing we've had to this obviously has or was the flu pandemic back in 1918 to 1920. That was the perfect mix of an unseen flu strain, World War One going on, all these troop movements and spreading it all over the world. I look at what we're going through now, Dr. Crawford, and look back then and say to myself, you know, thank God this took 100 years. I mean, I can't imagine, and I know there were dedicated medical personnel back then. I can't imagine what it must have been like, you know, to live through something like that pandemic when we were kind of in the Stone Ages with some things and seeing millions and millions of people killed back then. I'm reading a couple of books about it right now, and it's mind-boggling.
It is. It is. And first of all, they didn't even know what it was. They didn't know it was a virus. So they just had no idea what was going on, some kind of bacteria, they thought. I mean, my brother came from New York City. He was born in 1918. His mother developed the flu. And it turns out that later in life, she developed Parkinson's disease. And he always felt that there was a connection. And I think that was pretty prescient on his part, because we're seeing, even with this pandemic, a different virus, but some similarities, that there may be some effects on the brain. What is also very interesting, I think, is that The pandemic in 1918 killed 675,000 Americans, and we're up to 800,000. Now, obviously, the numbers are very different in terms of the total population. But one of the more shocking aspects of this is that given our technological advances, a century later, vaccines, tests, all of this, we are this high with the number of deaths.
Yeah.
That is a sobering statistic, and it means that, unfortunately, we haven't been playing this game together as a country, and I think that's had some very unfortunate side effects. But overall, I think technology and good common sense will win this game, but it's not over yet.
Great stuff, as always. Thank you, Dr. Sarah Crawford, Professor of Biology, Southern Connecticut State University. Thank you for your continued appearances. We appreciate it, trying to set people's minds at ease. And Happy New Year, and we'll talk with you down the road. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. Merry Christmas.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Dr. Sarah Crawford there.